When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carrillo.
This is Pam Shriver.
This is Yannick Noah, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, hello, folks, and welcome to your Day 8 Australian Open podcast. It's Pride Day at the Australian Open, or it was Pride Day until an hour and 22 minutes ago, because that's when the day ended. It's not when the tennis ended. Obviously, the tennis went on beyond midnight, and that was with the second night session match, or the second scheduled night session match, being moved to the second court. More on that later. Spoiler alert, there will be a rant, but I shouldn't start with a rant, because it's been a great day of tennis, a great evening of tennis. We had two absolute thrillers. They happened to be spread across two courts. We had Fritz against Tsitsipas on the Rod Laver Arena, and on the second court we had Arena Sabalenka and Kaya Kanepi, and we had some really good matches in the day session as well. And we'll be drilling down into all of it with Matt and myself in Melbourne, David in Solihull. I wanted to start by covering Pride Day a little bit. Matt and I have had our wristbands on. In fact, courtesy of lovely Cedric, friend of the pod, and listener and giver of gifts, Matt and I have four wristbands, and we've been told that they are much coveted, David. We were each wearing one today, one rainbow wristband each, and to the people on the media reception said, oh, you managed to score yourself a wristband. Those are in high demand. And Matt goes, oh, yeah, we've got four, actually.
Now we know why they're hard to find.
Yeah, we're just hoarding them, and we'll pop them all on eBay at the end of the tournament. Thanks to Cedric, we've got our wristbands. We've got our Pride fans, which have been dual purpose today, quite frankly. Don't worry, I got all of my ranting about how hot it is in before we started recording. David's had to listen to an earful of me complaining about the heat.
It's very much not hot here. I can promise you there's no issue with heat in Solihull, Catherine, if you'd like to change places at any point.
Well, I did have to have a cold shower before recording this podcast for everyone's sake, definitely for the sake of my mood. Anyway, that's all out of the way. No further complaining about the heat. So we've had our Pride fans, we've had our wristbands, and the Australian Open went very big on Pride Day today. And in fact, they've gone very big on equality. They've had this sort of, they've had this campaign around, haven't they, with Ash Barty featuring very prominently in it, you know, just not explicitly referencing gay rights or pride, but, you know, the messaging being about equality. But it still remains the case that they have somebody, the second stadium at this tournament is named after a very strong and vocal advocate against equality, and that is extremely problematic. I wanted to read out an email we've received from a listener whose name I'm going to pronounce as Jorge Boyas. And Matt's given me a thumbs up, so away I go.
That's the happiest I've seen you look all day, Catherine.
And it's good, because I'm going to have to say his name again, because he starts with, hello, my name is Jorge Boyas. He says, you probably see me pestering the TTP Twitter timeline this Aussie Open. He's a relatively new listener. I'll skip the bits where he says lovely, lovely things about the show, but thank you, Jorge, for your kind words. He says, part of the reason why I tweet at you so much is because I have so much to say, but no one to say it to. But we're very grateful to receive this communication from you. He says, day eight has just started in Australia, but I'm already disappointed in the tournament's Pride Day efforts on social media. Specifically, the first two tweets they've posted, the second one of which the tennis podcast has retweeted, my identity as a gay man who's been at least questioning his sexual orientation since 5 years old gives me a perspective that makes me view their words differently than a lot of other people. This is what life is all about, different perspectives. But unity only works if we actually consider those perspectives. From my view, the video they posted that the tennis podcast has retweeted feels like a slap in the face. Half the video is spent telling us to enjoy the tennis. There is no mention of the LGBTQ plus community by name. And I don't understand why they are all thanking us for our support. The LGBTQ plus community does not support the sport of tennis as a political bloc, as far as I know. If I want to get into semantics, quote, see you around is just a throwaway line. Nobody can look lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer, or any other identity on the gender expression and gender orientation spectrums, but it's not semantics. The point my community has been trying to make for decades is that anyone can be a part of this community, and it's an example of how little thought was put into the words given to and or thought of by those players. It speaks to the hollow nature of these Pride Day efforts. And again, he makes the point about Margaret Court's name still being on the stadium, there being no openly gay players on the ATP tour. And he says everyone walks around saying, I have no idea why a gay person would be made to feel uncomfortable about their sexuality by the ATP. He says, these are only a few issues that need to be of concern by those actually committed to being allies. Until these issues are mentioned in serious detail by this tournament, their Pride Day efforts should not be considered as enough. Tolerance is not enough anymore. And my goodness me, there's so much to get into there, a lot of nuance, a lot of detail, and a lot to be considered. And I really appreciate that, Jorge. I mean, ultimately, this tournament is in a very tricky position, I believe, because of the name of that second court, and they're backed into a corner. And it's pretty clear, I think, that the name of that court is not going to change. They've no intention of changing that name, and while that name remains on the court, everything might feel a bit hollow and a bit like empty gesturing. As lovely as some of the things that were done today were, you know, the Rod Laver Arena was lit up in rainbow colours tonight, and that was fantastic. And it really did feel like a genuine commitment to Pride Day today. But it's a problematic situation for this tournament, I think.
Yeah, there's always going to be a tension on a Pride Day when you have, well, I'm just going to say it, a known outspoken homophobe on the name of the second court. Until that is changed, a day like this won't feel completely what it could be, what it should be, what everyone hopes it to be, I think. So I really want to say thanks to Jorge for sending us that message and sharing his experience. That's really important, I think. And as you say, a lot of it really did resonate with us. I think the videos they put up could have had more introspection. Not even using the word gay in the script, for example, makes it sound a bit shallow, I suppose. But, you know, I can talk about my experience on site today at Melbourne Park. And it was a really good vibe on site today. You know, it was great seeing so many Pride flags. I do think a lot of thought and attention and detail had gone into a lot of activities around the site. We didn't see a lot of them because we were in the media center.
In the air conditioning.
In the air conditioning. But, you know, you could get tattoos. There were shows.
I could get a tattoo.
Yeah.
Wow. A memento of the trip.
And, you know, I think we saw a lot of fans with pride flags and wearing rainbow colours. And over this tournament, we've seen Kokkinakis wearing the rainbow wristbands. We've seen Liam Brody wearing the laces.
Elise Cornet's team are all wearing the wristbands today. They managed to score a haul of wristbands as well.
Yes, absolutely. My take on this is that we have to... yes, I agree. It isn't enough. There should be more, but you have to learn to, I think, accept small progress along the way. And this didn't exist at the Australian Open before today, so it's, you know, it's progress that it exists now. Can it be better? Yes. Should it be better? Yes. Should all tournaments have it? Should all slams have it? Yes, I think absolutely. There's a lot more work to be done, but I ultimately see today as a win, really. I think we can't be too harsh on it, because there were a lot of good things done, I think, today.
Mm. Yeah,
I felt safe, I felt seen, I felt included, you know, all of that.
Mm. It was a good vibe, wasn't it? It was a very good vibe. Mm.
I mean, I find that very interesting to listen to, both Jorge's email, which I read myself earlier on today before you decided to include it in today's show, and I'm really glad you did, because it makes me think about things. I have my own reaction to things upon seeing them. Then I hear you talk about them. I see other people talk about them, and then I read that, and it all helps me to understand things that I feel like I need to try to understand. And just on the sort of the small wins along the way, ending up hopefully in a place where you feel like proper progress is made and where you want to end up being. I remember being at the Australian Open the year that court was first introduced and named, and I don't really remember anything in terms of protest or disappointment in that decision. And then I remember being there the year that Laura Robson wore the rainbow hairband, which you referenced a few days ago, Catherine. And you know, that was a small moment, but a small gesture, but a big moment, really. And it created an enormous amount of publicity, as you talked about at the time. So from there, that first year that I was there when it was named, to Laura, to now, that does feel like a big jump to me. But I also understand that I'm not the one that has at every stage got to face this, or has had to face this at every turn, and I want to understand. And it's just really helpful to hear these sort of stories.
Mm, absolutely, same. And that's why I wanted to read it out. And I think yeah, today was progress, and it was really positive, and it's important to celebrate that and not be down on it just because it's not, you know, perfect progress. But equally, I think we need not to be complacent and not all just pat ourselves on the back for wearing some wristbands, as much as I'm delighted with the wristbands, because, you know, tennis has a problem. There not being any openly gay male players is a problem. And I often think about the gay male players that there definitely are, and how awful that must be for them. So yeah, progress, not perfection, as a tennis player might say in a very boring press conference. Just while we're covering off sort of politics, non-forehands and backhand stuff, there's been a story today where a video was released by somebody that had tried to attend the tennis or had attended the tennis, and security, this was on Friday actually, and security staff had asked them to remove their T-shirts, which said, "Where is Peng Shuai?" They also had a banner that was confiscated by them. Tennis Australia released a statement saying Peng Shuai's safety remains their primary concern, but they defended their decision to confiscate those items. They said, "Under our ticket conditions of entry, we don't allow clothing, banners or signs that are commercial or political." And this is something that Martina Navratilova has most notably spoken out about. She says that's just pathetic. And she points out, you know, the strong stance that the WTA are taking on the issue of Peng Shuai. It's something that several players were asked about in their press conferences today, in particular Lise Cornet, who was the first, I think, tennis player to tweet, "Where is Peng Shuai?" It's so difficult, isn't it? This is such a tricky situation. I've been thinking about it all day. Ultimately, I think muddying around in the murky waters of trying to define what is political or not is so futile and actually quite silly, because life is politics, isn't it? Politics is life. People will have slightly different definitions of what is politics and what isn't. You know, lots of people think taking the knee is political. There are people that would think us wearing rainbow wristbands today was political. I mean, I don't think either of those are particularly political, other than that in the general definition of sort of everything is political, because, as I say, politics is life, life is politics, sport is life. trying to define what is and isn't is pointless. So maybe rather than policing what is and isn't on people's T-shirts, I can understand the desire to have something in your rules that prevents gatherings and protests. I can see why that is important. So maybe it should be about the nature of the protest, you know, large numbers, banners, that sort of thing. I think what people say on their T-shirt,
I think it's ridiculous, to be honest. And I was disappointed that Tennis Australia kept so quiet when Peng Shuai's whereabouts, and we may more or less know that she's physically okay, but we don't know that she's properly free and safe at all. But I was really disappointed that they said nothing at the time in terms of speaking up and against what was happening, apparently. But I kind of understood it from a certain lens, because of their vested interest in China and them being the Grand Slam of Asia Pacific. I get that. I don't get this. I think this is ridiculous. And yes, I understand you don't want to have incitement and or, as you say, public order issues based on protests within their grounds. Those things I would understand. This, come on.
Yeah, and I think sort of a statement falling back on, you know, pointing to the area of the rules that says, you know, we don't allow T-shirts with commercial stuff on. I mean, doesn't every T-shirt have a logo on it? I mean, that seemed... Anyway, agreed. I think we're all in agreement there. Let's talk about tennis, shall we? Where would we all like to start? Would we like to go chronologically? Would we like to start with our highlight of the day? Matt and I have just watched pretty much all of Stefanos Tsitsipas against Taylor Fritz, the five-set Rod Laver Arena epic. Matt saw more of it in the flesh than I did, because I had a bit of a drama trying to acquire some chips. But in the end...
Did you?
We had chips... and a five-set epic.
Oh, well.
It's possible that someone spat in the chips because of the drama that preceded my acquiring them.
Catherine left me for half an hour, and in that time, there was a whole saga that took place that just doesn't happen when I'm around.
No, I behave when Matt's there.
I was going to say, it doesn't completely surprise me that that's...
Anyway, Matt was delighted when I showed up with chips, so you can pipe down. And it was a blooming good match to have snacks for, wasn't it?
It was a very good match. There was a really good atmosphere on the Rod Laver Arena. I think we've been a bit annoyed at some of the atmosphere that's been generated at this tournament with all the suing that's been going on. But tonight felt like a really proper tennis atmosphere generated by a lot of the Greek fans in there supporting Tsitsipas. And actually, I really think they helped him tonight. I think they energized him and helped him battle through, because I don't think he was playing his best tennis. I don't think Tsitsipas is particularly close, actually, considering the brilliant stuff we've seen from him in the past. He's playing well, but he's not playing his absolute best. He is He's having to fight his game. He's having to search for it. And he displayed an awful lot of character tonight to fight through this match against Fritz, who I think was pretty much playing exactly the tennis he wanted to play. It was pretty much a peaking Taylor Fritz and a battling Tsitsipas hanging on. And I think the key statistic is that Tsitsipas took three of his five break points and seemed to break in all the games where he had opportunities, whereas Fritz created way more opportunities but didn't capitalize on them and wasn't able to shake off Tsitsipas. And as I said, Tsitsipas battled through, fought hard, and I was really, really impressed with him.
And crestfallen for Taylor Fritz, who cut a very sorry sight as he left the court. I don't think he choked. But equally, I do think the experience told for Tsitsipas in the end there. There were just a couple of hesitant volleys from Taylor Fritz and maybe one double fault in the game that he got broken. But I think he had it on the tennis, Taylor Fritz, actually. I really do. I think the crowd helped Tsitsipas immensely. I think perhaps Taylor Fritz didn't love being the crowd being so much against him, and that'll all be experience for him. I think, you know, in the grander scheme of things, tonight is only good news for Taylor Fritz. I really do think he's shown us something we haven't seen before in a Grand Slam, and I think he can build on this. But in the moment, it's going to be gutting because on the tennis, I think he probably should have taken it. It was gorgeous tennis, really great point construction from Taylor Fritz tonight. Good rally tolerance. You know, he wasn't trying to bail out and pull the trigger too early and go for highlight reel shots, which maybe he has a bit, particularly on the forehand side in the past. I was so impressed with him, and I'm gutted for him, really. And what struck me, I don't want to be harsh on Tsitsipas, because I was ultimately so impressed with his fight and his desire and his tenacity tonight. I really was. But what really struck me was looking at two players, one who's improved immensely, and Tsitsipas, who maybe is the same player he was a year or two ago. I don't know. He might just not have found his full form this tournament. He might be troubled by that elbow, although it seemed to be okay tonight. Certainly his service speeds were fine, but maybe that's not a fair comparison. But one of those two players was so improved, obviously coming from a starting point further behind. And I don't know how much Tsitsipas has improved, you know, since a year ago.
I think maybe, he was talking about the relief that his elbow doesn't hurt. And it obviously had been hurting in the past before he had the surgery. And he spoke to Tim Henman, who's had elbow surgeries, in the Eurosport interview. And that was the overriding impression he gave, was just of somebody who's relieved that the elbow doesn't hurt anymore. But I think what it has done is probably hampered his progress, because if you've had 6 months of being in pain, you're probably not going to improve in that time. And then what the surgery will have done is taken something out of his off season, so it'll have been about getting back to full fitness rather than making incremental improvements, I think. And he found a way to win tonight. And looking at the stats, I mean, they go with your impression of the tennis you saw, which is certainly my impression too. 15 break points for Taylor Fritz to 5 of Tsitsipas. That is grim reading for Taylor Fritz, because he should have won that match, and he knew it as he walked off that court shaking his head. He knew it. He should have won that match in his mind. Took 2 out of 15. I hope for his sake he can use that to get it right next time. It can go either way, can't it? But just tactically, I thought it's quite interesting that Tsitsipas threw in a load of slice today, mixing
so
it up.
Much.
And also a lot of short arm jab, flat backhands down the line just to change it up. Things that I don't really associate with him. It's all the flourish in the past. I would like to think that that's maybe not an improvement, because it doesn't look quite right yet, but it's an open-mindedness to trying to improve.
Yeah, my feeling was, in principle, this is good. That is something you need to develop in your game. But at the moment, it's not very good.
It was sort of the ultimate compliment to both of them, because Fritz, I think, forced Tsitsipas to change his game a little bit. And Tsitsipas responded by doing it. You know, they sort of both did what they should do out there. And yes, Tsitsipas, his slice should be better than it is. I think can get better than it is. But it wasn't always ineffective tonight. And I think just the fact that he was using it was kind of a positive. I do find Tsitsipas's current place in tennis quite interesting. And what you're saying there about Fritz being one who's improving. We're also seeing, you know, Alcaraz improving at a very fast rate. We're seeing Jannik Sinner improve at a very fast rate. Tsitsipas has had a couple of years now where he's been the young guy knocking on the door. And now there are other people knocking on his door, knocking on Medvedev's door, knocking on Djokovic's door. It's an interesting place Tsitsipas finds himself in. Now, I think he's often been assumed to be the sort of next in line to get the major. And
by people making big Greek predictions.
By people who are forced to make predictions every week. And actually, maybe that is going to change him a little bit.
He was asked in the post-match interview on court by a slightly nervous Sam Groth. The question was, Stefanos, you've been flying really under the radar this tournament. No one's really talking about you. How are you finding that? And I don't think Tsitsipas liked that very much. I think he very much wants to be on top of the radar.
The star of the Netflix show.
As evidenced by, you know, how proudly he told everybody that he was part of the Netflix show. And I knew about the Netflix before you knew about the Netflix. You know, under the radar, I don't think is where Tsitsipas wants to be.
I mean, my sense when I listen to him is that he just doesn't think like everybody else, and he doesn't even know what's going on from one point to the next in terms of what the score is. So I don't trust that he knows where he is on the radar, to be quite honest. I don't think he's in his own little world half the time, isn't he? I mean, bless him, but I don't know what he's banging on about half the time. So, you know, I love watching him play tennis, and he seems to be a really nice lad, but I don't sense that he's got any idea where the radar is.
Who's the favourite when he takes on Jannik Sinner in 2 days' time? Matt and I, when we were watching, I think we were midway through the fifth set. Fritz hadn't been broken yet. It was nip and tuck. Matt said to me,
I made an unsolicited prediction.
Which I'm now going to disclose to all our listeners. Matt said, I think Sinner will beat either of them.
Well,
yes.
Sinner looks like the Stone Cold Killer right now. I know it sounds a bit gory, but you know, just in tennis terms, he looks like the ruthless, I'm just going to get the job done in three straight sets, and it's not going to be particularly thrilling kind of player. And Tsitsipas looks like he's having to go through epics in order to stay afloat here. So I think probably he is.
I was trying to figure out a way to describe what happened in the Sinner-Dimonor match today. And then Sinner actually came up with the line which I thought said it all, where he said, I went into my confidence, which was quite a interesting expression. And I think basically what he meant was that first set was tight. It really was. Dimonor was probably the better player in it, actually. And Sinner was the one having to get through tight games. And yet as soon as it got to the tie break, Dimonor's game broke down a bit and Sinner's just went from strength to strength. And then second and third sets, he rolled through. And he has an ability to accelerate onto shots that, I mean, Dimonor couldn't handle it. And I'm not sure, not quite 100% Tsitsipas will be able to fully live with it either. I mean, honestly, he can apply so much pressure just by the strike he has on the ball. I'm a little bit confused about whether he's already working with a super coach or whether he is claiming he wants to work with a super coach. All of these quotes have been in Italian, the ones I've seen, and does sound like he's getting some extra advice other than from Piatti at the moment. And yeah, I agree. There's something different about him, I think. I think he'll win that quarterfinal. Yeah, I've said it again. God.
David, tell me why Sinner isn't boring.
Well,
because I don't want to find him boring. I really want to be into it. I really do. I can see how his tennis, you know, can take your breath away and all of that. But I find myself zoning out. I find my mind wandering. I find myself not engaged. Help me.
Well, I mean, he's winning too easily. That's why they're boring matches, because he's brilliant. And I don't think a procession is particularly exciting, but that's not his fault. And I think that you put him in a match, a real contest, and I think he has gasp-inducing tennis. His movements, his sort of side-to-side, full throttle, screech to a halt in a sort of skier-like manner, and then go back the other way and hit these bullet drives. It'll be exciting when he's doing that against big time players. When he's throwing that up against, well, Tsitsipas being one. If he were to knock out Tsitsipas, now yes, I think that on balance I might go for Sinner to win that too. But that would still be a big upset on paper, given what their history is in terms of this tournament. And then if he were to take that on and throw it up against Medvedev, I mean that's when it gets exciting, because he has, you know, he's not going to bore these guys into submission in terms of his tennis. It's not going to kind of send them to sleep and then end up missing. He's going to be looking to take them out with every shot. And I find that very exhilarating. I mean, look, he's a quiet lad. He's poker-faced and a very unassuming look about him. We know he can give more than that, because we saw it at the Davis Cup and in Turin. But I don't want him to be what he isn't. And I find his game exhilarating when he's up against the right kind of player for it to make an occasion.
You seem already to have put Daniil Medvedev in the semi-finals, David. Are you writing off the chances of Felix or Gerard-Yassim in the quarters?
No.
Because that is who we will face.
No, I mean, I think Medvedev will go all the way. I mean, that's what I said at the start of the tournament. I would say I'm less confident right now than I was at the start of the tournament. Of him even making the final. Now, that's a little bit from today, I think, and we'll get on to what Cressy pushed him to, but I think the fact that he took a set and he made it stressful and he got some of the worst of Daniil Medvedev and the best, depending on how you look at it, out of him. But what I think it showed is that Medvedev still has one or two vulnerabilities. And the other thing is, the other two that we've just described there, okay, Tsitsipas may not have made major strides in the last year, sort of 8 months, say, since the French Open final, but the other two have. Felix Auger-Aliassime is coming. That was a really good win for him today against Marin Cilic. Showed really good mental strength, because Cilic was playing lights out 2014 US Open tennis in the first set, and it could have shocked Felix into just disappearing. And instead he dug in. He really showed some mettle in that match and used his own physicality and frankly just outlasted Cilic. So the only real disappointment from Auger-Aliassim this year so far was against Medvedev in the second set of that ATP Cup. Bear in mind, he was with him for 8 games and he beat Zverev, stood toe-to-toe with Zverev at the ATP Cup and beat him. And he's got himself through to this stage. So he's improving, and Sinner's improving even more. So, you know, I feel less confident that Medvedev will get there now. And also the pressure's all on him now. Everybody expects him to win this thing.
Interesting. See, I still feel very confident in Medvedev, despite what happened today, which was a four-set win over Maxime Cressy. And by his own admission, Medvedev, he was in trouble today. He said that had he not won that fourth set, I think he eventually broke Cressy's serve on his 9th breakpoint opportunity in that set. He said had he not taken that set, given all the squandered opportunities, he would have been in, quote, tough mental shape. You know, they both knew that he potentially had him in a fifth set. He was mentally on the ropes, and Cressy was disrupting Medvedev in all the ways. But I do think that was quite a lot down to Maxim Cressy, quite frankly. I really do think it was that matchup today, the conditions today. Medvedev doesn't love the heat, and it was hugely unpleasant at the time that they were playing. Maxim Cressy seems to be not bothered, not to even notice any kind of weather conditions whatsoever. Medvedev was bothered by his court assignment. He's made no secret of that. That's two matches in a row he's been scheduled on the second court. And he spoke about that following a question from Ben Rothenberg in the press conference afterwards. He's not usually keen to make court requests. He was like, I don't want to be that guy that insists on playing on a certain court at a certain time. He said once this tournament he had asked to play on the Rod Laver Arena, and he was like, I guess maybe I have to ask every time, because it doesn't go without saying. He didn't like the lack of space behind the baseline on the second court. He said it, you know, genuinely plays differently, and he was standing so far back to receive serve. We were laughing, Matt and I, watching on the telly, just speculating about whether he was standing that far back in order to be in the shadow because of how hot it was. I mean, he was barely on the screen at times, but I think he was trying to dip the return just over the net to get it at Maxim Cressy's feet. So I think there were a few factors in it today, and I'm not sure any of them will apply in his future matches, because Maxim Cressy won't be there. He's going to be on the Rod Laver Arena. I feel like, you know, he might have had his sort of mental wander today, and it'll only harden him. And, you know, Medvedev said it was down to Maxim Cressy. He was full of good things to say about Cressy, David. I asked him, you know, Cressy's a confident and ambitious guy. He thinks his game can get him top 10 or even number one. I said, is that realistic? And I expected him to balk a little bit at number one. Because, you know, Medvedev's the next number one in waiting, surely. And he will hope and expect to be there for a long time, I'm sure. But Medvedev said, yep, I think that is realistic. You know, nothing's a given. But he thought his game was very impressive, and he was impressed with his staying power and resilience and mental attitude. He saw a lot that he liked today, Medvedev. He's been listening to you, David.
You also saw a lot that he didn't like, because it sent him a bit doolally, and he admitted to having to resort basically to gamesmanship and talking out loud and kind of just dissing the game of Cressy and saying how boring it was when he lost the third set, Medvedev. And he said, I was getting stressed, and I thought maybe if I say these things out loud, it'll get in his head. I thought, what an extraordinary admission. But that's what he said. And I thought Cressy impressed me when he hit those two blind in return winners. I didn't really see those coming in that third set tiebreak. I thought it was going to be straight sets, and actually he wasn't far away from turning it around. I don't necessarily buy number one in the world for Maxim Cressy. I think he can be a top 10 player with that game, but that's as much as I'd be prepared to say at this point.
Shall I tell you what Tim Henman thinks about Maxim Cressy, who is... Tim Henman is the harshest critic of volleying that I know. He's said on Amazon Prime before that he doesn't rate Roger Federer's volleys too highly. Certainly, yeah, I think relative to other players, he rates them highly. But, you know, relative to his era of volleying, not so highly. Anyway, Tim Henman said, really enjoyed the match, 2! And Tim's not, you know... He's not a big punctuation guy. He said, think he didn't serve the right spots at all against Medvedev, but fought very well. We'll enjoy watching more of him in the future. Volleys, 7 out of 10.
That's
praise
pretty
indeed,
good,
folks. Yeah. Praise it indeed.
Is.
So coming to a top 10 near you sometime soon. So Medvedev against Felix Auger-Aliassime and Stefanos Tsitsipas against Jannik Sinner. It's a very next gen-y flavour, isn't it? In that half of the draw.
It is actually, isn't it?
They're just the gen now.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right.
So, what about the women's matches today? Goodness me, we've had some upsets. We really have had some upsets today. Shall we start with Elise Cornet, who beat Simona Halep today 6-4, 3-6, 6-4. Elise Cornet has reached her first Grand Slam quarterfinal in her 63rd Grand Slam appearance. That is just an extraordinary record and absolutely a record that Elise Cornet is and was aware of. This means everything to Elise Cornet, everything. You've never seen joy like it in the press conference afterwards. She can't believe it, really. And the match was incredible, played in the heat of the day. The heat rule was enforced between sets two and three. It was a great advert for the heat rule, actually, because I'm not sure anyone would have been able to find the court in that third set had they not been able to go off for presumably an ice bath. And Elise Cornet summed it up perfectly herself, I think, in the post-match interview on court. She said, after half an hour, we were both dying on the court, but we carried on for 2.5 hours with all our hearts. And my goodness me, did Elise Cornet leave her heart out there, Matt?
Oh, I think this was one of my moments of the tournament, actually, so far, this match. It was grueling because neither player has what you would call a point-ending shot, really. They have to work the points. They have to move each other about the court. And in mid-30-degree heat, that was incredibly demanding on them in all the ways, physically, mentally, emotionally, and Cornet looked like she had a set and a breakup, and Halep was hunching over. I think a lot of people thought she had a leg injury because she kept clutching her leg, but she did confirm in press that she was just exhausted. And then suddenly, Cornet seemed to have no energy left, and Halep actually won the last 16 points of the second set to take it into a third. And exactly as you said, then there was the break, and the third set was sort of nip and tuck the whole way. And, you know, the moment Cornet did it, she sunk to her knees, she took it all in. And, you know, I asked her in the press conference whether it was everything she hoped it would be, because sometimes you can build up a moment like that. As you said,
great question.
63 attempts she's had to reach a quarterfinal. So many near misses. She'd been to the fourth round at all of the slams.
And had match points in the fourth round here 13 years ago.
Yeah, so, you know, was it everything she hoped it would be? God, yes. She said absolutely it was. She'd been crying happy tears in the locker room afterwards.
She said, I was crying in the ice bath.
Yeah, and just on that fourth round, 13 years ago at Melbourne Park, 2009, I mean, this was another one of the moments of the tournament, one of the best moments of the tournament, actually, because that one, 2009, was against Dinara Safina, and she had two match points, didn't take them, and she would have faced Jelena Dokic in the quarterfinal. And she said, that was a match I never got to play. And then, suddenly, once she won this one, she was in the quarterfinals for the first time, and who was there to interview her but Jelena Dokic? And it was just this sort of perfect moment of paths crossing again and overlapping narratives, I suppose. And I thought what Cornet did in that on-court interview, firstly, to find the words in English to put the achievement and the emotion into context. She said an incredible line that it's never too late to try again, which sort of sums up her entire quest to try and reach a quarterfinal. And then there was this moment where this was her moment. This was all about her. And yet she turned it back on Dokic and just said how proud she was of Dokic for the career she's built post-tennis. Obviously, we know Dokic has had a really, really hard life in so many ways, particularly because of her abusive father. And they hugged it out, and it was just a lovely moment of real sort of empathy from Cornet. It was a really beautiful moment that she made about someone else other than just her, even though sort of it was her moment. I thought it was really classy from Cornet, and she's someone who's maybe not known for that quite so much. You know, we think of her, we think of drama. As she said herself, I'm a drama queen for the people. It's just another epic quote.
I'm getting a T-shirt made with that on, and it's not a political statement. It's just a statement.
But yeah, she's also capable of great, great class, and, you know, get yourself someone who can do both. That's what we love to see.
Matt and I stayed on for the French portion of her press conference, which was every bit as joyful as the English portion, and we learnt that good vibes in French is bon vibes, and she said bon vibes a lot in the French, which was just wonderful. I asked her, now that, you know, she talked about just that elusive quarterfinal being such a goal for her, and I said, you know, now you've got that goal, what do you do? What's the next goal? Do you think you can win it? And I'm always wary of asking that sort of question, putting that finer point on it, you know, like I did to Maxime Cressy. And I said, what, you know, is that what you think, top 10? Because I always just expect them to shut it down, you know, and be defensive and just not wanting to commit themselves to anything, really. But she said, the sky's the limit. I really want to be ambitious at this slam. For the first time of my life, I really believe I can go till the end. And for somebody that sort of semi-announced that this would be her last year on tour, now she hasn't committed to that, and I do wonder if she'll change her mind. That's pretty incredible, isn't it, for her to be saying for the first time she thinks she could. Who knows if she will? I really don't know. She faces Danielle Collins in the next round, in the quarterfinals, who beat Elise Mertens today, 4-6, 6-4, 6-4. And Lise Cornet described Danielle Collins as sort of the only player more intense than her on a tennis court. She says she's like a lion, which is lovely. And that is going to be, that's going to be my kind of match, David. It's going to be drama queeny and possibly a bit of aggro, but sort of game meets game kind of aggro.
Yeah, Catherine's going to be there before the players. She's going to be up before Matt
with the t-shirt on, a drama queen for the people t-shirt.
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking back. You know, I was commentating on that Dokic run to the quarterfinals in 2009. I remember it ever so vividly because she had made this incredible comeback, having, if you consider Dokic beat Martina Hingis at Wimbledon in 1999, you know, you're going back 10 years earlier, and she completely retired. She was nowhere near tennis for years. And then she made this extraordinary run through to the quarterfinals that year, and has had some good wins along the way as well. The crowd absolutely loved her. And I have this memory of sitting at our desk doing reports when a young woman came up on the screen in her press conference who I did not recognize, and that would have been a teenage Elise Cornet. And I remember it vividly because I asked one of my French colleagues sitting to the side of me, who's that? And he told me who it was. And she went years without actually matching that achievement. You know, it was one of those where it was a breakout achievement, run to the fourth round, and then she would just kind of get caught in the first couple of rounds of tournaments thereafter. And it took her probably 5 or 6 years before she started to make an impact again. And she beat Serena Williams at Wimbledon. You know, she would get these amazing wins, but not be able to string them together and have a run. So, and then I ended up commentating on her quite a bit at BT Sport when they had the women's tour rights. And there was always a lot of people looking down the nose a little bit at Elise Cornet. And because she irritates people, because she's prepared to speak out, because she doesn't hide it if she's annoyed, if she's upset, or if she's hurt. She lets everybody in the whole stadium know about it. People get wound up by this. And so she's got criticised a lot over the years. But my word, is it fun to watch her. And this moment, I like the fact that she is herself no matter what anybody says. I'm going to be myself. And you mentioned earlier in the podcast, Catherine, she was the first one to speak out when things had died down after the initial news broke about Peng Shuai. She was the one who reminded everybody, don't forget about Peng Shuai. She's the one who made us go and start looking into it again, publicising it ourselves. And within a few days, it was kicking off, you know, and she's the reason for it. And because she's not prepared to just go away quietly into the corner and do what everybody thinks she should do. And she's done it again. Here she is in the quarterfinals. Brilliant.
Mm. And I think we all thought she beat Garbiñe Muguruza second round, that, you know, great moment, incredible upset. Probably just, you know, exactly that, a moment and an upset. Maybe she'd back it up and win one more. I don't think any of us saw this coming.
Speak for yourself. 70 points in the newsletter says otherwise.
I had a chance of that, Matt, didn't I? Because you gave me the one, the choice before you, and I went for Diminor. Oh.
Anyway, so we got Collins against Cornet, and a fantastic press conference that Collins gave today. We won't dwell on it because details on it in our newsletter today. Danielle Collins talking about the impact that endometriosis was having on her tennis career and the decision to have surgery last year, and the fact that, you know, this is the first time she feels like she's ever had a proper pre-season block. And she talked about how, you know, previously all training blocks had to be managed around her cycle, around her menstrual cycle, because her periods were that terrible and that painful, and it just, you know, new lease on life for her. And she spoke about it so openly and so brilliantly, and she's another person that's just unapologetically herself, and I love it, and can't wait for Collins against Cornet. And the full exchange, it was myself and Tamani Carriol from The Guardian and Simon Briggs Matt's new doubles partner. They're playing doubles in about sort of 8 hours' time. It was the three of us in the press conference with Danielle Collins, and it was brilliant. So subscribe to the newsletter if you haven't already. The other quarterfinal in that bottom half of the women's draw will be Iga Świątek against Kaya Kanepi, who's completed her collection of Grand Slam quarterfinals. This was the only slam she hadn't been to the quarterfinals of, because, of course, she's a specialist in Grand Slams. She is extraordinary, Kaya Kanepi. Matt and I didn't see much of either of these matches, David, because it coincided with some of Fritz and Tsitsipas, which we were watching slash trying to obtain chips during, and also with the Świątek match coincided with a flurry of press conferences that we wanted to get to. So over to you for your hot takes on these two matches, please.
Well, first, Świątek, I was most amused with the surveillance cameras backstage that showed her juggling three tennis balls up against a wall, just doing all sorts of tricks as she got ready for the match. And I thought that's a very Iga Świątek thing to do and to be able to do. You just get the sense that she has this this sorcery at her fingertips and is able to do pretty much whatever she wants, whenever she wants. But she had her hands full today because Kostea came out blazing. And she's another one a little bit like Elise Cornet, you know, a little later in her career now and getting the best out of whatever's left. And she was knocking Świątek off the court. And it took everything, really, that the pole could find in her game to turn it around. And she had to dig in. She did that. She found the shots. And she looks really good. She sort of won going away by the end. The Kanepi Sabalenka match, well, it was just a real disappointment that it was shunted out onto the second court as a victim of the schedulers, because it got stuck on scheduled after the Dimonor match and then the Tsitsipas match, which meant that when the schedule started to go long, it was either they're playing after midnight on a deserted, probably Rod Laver Arena, or they're playing on a second court, which has also got nobody in it because nobody was expecting a match to be taking place over there. And it's just that sort of thing has just got our goat all tournament long, and it has been doing for years. And, I mean, occasionally people say, well, what else can they do? You know, they've got these great matches on. Well, when was the last time you can remember the men's match being shoved out onto the second court because a great women's match is going out on because it was scheduled at prime time? It doesn't happen, and it's really frustrating. But anyway, it's played in empty stadium. They
David's
went at
done
it.
My rant for me.
Well, there you go.
Thank you. Same I'm delighted. Bit. I'm delighted, David.
They went at it. They went at it head to head, these two, and they were knocking lumps out of each other. I actually haven't got the stats for Sabalenka to know what the double fault count was like, to be quite honest. But the match itself was, I mean, it was just full of nerves because, you know, Kanepi was leading, she had her chances. I thought she'd let it slip, and she has tended when she's got these great opportunities. You know, she's great in the first round, knocking out a big name, but when you then expect her to take the next step and go all the way, she's always come up a little bit short. But there was a great moment in the third set tiebreak where, I mean, I honestly, I'm watching it and I'm thinking 7-6 match point. And of course it isn't, because it's the final set tiebreak. And she did exactly the same thing, and she thought she'd won the match. And she goes, and then she just goes, oh, so that's to do it all again. And if you can find that gif, get on it, I would say. But anyway, I think she was a worthy winner in the end, and yeah, another great little story for her. I mean, it might not make big global waves. There are other bigger stories than Kaya Kanepi, but for her, that is a massive moment, and she, you could see it all over her face in the interview afterwards.
You get lots of great stories in slams, don't you? But there's something I think really interesting about players, you know, finally accomplishing something. And we had that with Cornet today. We had it with Kanepi finally completing her set of Grand Slam quarterfinals. they're really satisfying stories when something like that happens. You know, we love breakthroughs, we love young players coming out, but there's also a lot of great stories about players who've given a lot to tennis over the years and persisted and just chipped away and, you know, have filled up drawers and provided us with moments. And it's nice when they get, you know, some of the spotlight as well.
It's never too late to try again, folks. That's exactly what we've learned from today.
Two T-shirts.
And it probably makes Simona Halep feel better about losing, because she can think, well, I'd only have lost to Kanepi anyway. She's always losing to Kanepi in slams, isn't she? Right then, I think that's it for day eight. It's been so jam-packed, this episode, that I haven't had the opportunity to tell you, David, and the listeners about my absolute Wordle triumph today.
I don't even know what Wordle is, to be honest.
I mean, I have been buzzing all day. Honestly, it's the biggest endorphin hit I've had in 2 years. It was immense. It started my day off such a pep in my step. So much of a pep in my step that I ended up getting into NFL, David. It's been a really big day.
Now we're talking.
Yeah, we don't have time to talk about it, though. But slate it for a later date.
But we do want to say shout out to Andrew, who does our Twitter during the Australian Open, during the day sessions. Big Buffalo Bills fan.
As am I now.
As I feel, is Catherine.
I really think I feel... I've been a Bills fan for 100% of my NFL supporting life.
And same,
I really,
to be honest.
I feel all of your pain. Hashtag Bills Mafia. Yeah.
We love you, Andrew. And that was brutal.
It was. Yeah. Definitely time for a rule
amazing,
change.
Amazing sport, wasn't it?
Yes. Sport is brilliant. Right then. Also, quick shout out for Scott Fleming, who had his official shout out the other day, but today he brought Matt and me fudge at our desk. Oh. Homemade fudge.
Amazing.
Amazing.
Scott works for Hawkeye, and he lives in Scotland, I found out, and is now on the road for months. You know, after this, he's going to the Middle East and then onto the European clay and everything. And yeah, he bumped into me and said, oh, I'm really glad I saw you. I've got an entire bag full of fudge for you. Yeah.
What would he have done if he hadn't bumped into you? Just wandered around for the rest of the tournament with a bag full of fudge.
But it's delicious.
Delicious.
We've tried
Thank
some.
You. Thank you, Scott. You're fueling our evening. We have all the usual suspects. Charlie, our Australian Open mascot. Love Charlie. Love Billie Jean, obviously, as do Billie Jean King and Alana Kloss. David has Darwin. Matt has Gerald the Cat. Don't look smug. Matt, I've got Carter, Chris Albert Lee, Carl Weingartner are our executive producers and top blokes. And Matt, we have some shout outs.
We have Gail Nell from Madison, Wisconsin.
Nell, a bit like the Wordle word today.
Right. And and Gail Monfils will be trying to do you proud tomorrow.
Yes.
Absolutely. Yes. Although this is Gail AI rather than AE, but.
Well.
It sounds
It's all
the
in
same.
The clothes. It's like Catherine's with a K. Thank you,
we
Gail.
We embrace them all.
Very much indeed.
We also have Stacey Meadows from Dallas, Texas.
Oh, lovely. Like Jenny Meadows, the runner. Stacey won't know who that is. Anyway.
I wonder if Stacey's a Dallas Cowboys fan. They had a bit of a bad time in the playoffs. Sorry about that.
That was before I was an NFL fan, David.
But thanks for your support.
Thank you, Stacey.
And finally, we have Margaret Sutherland, who says she's lived in Glasgow for 50 years. She's originally from Westport, County Mayo in Ireland. And get this, she says, I lost my sight 25 years ago, and I love the tennis pictures that you paint on the podcast.
Oh that's
wow.
Lovely.
You've got to prepare us for this stuff, Matt. It's 2:33 a.m. I'm tired and emotional anyway. That's really lovely. Margaret is my mum's middle name. And Sutherland is like Kiefer Sutherland or Donald Sutherland.
And it is our absolute pleasure and privilege to be able to, well, hopefully help you enjoy the tennis. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Margaret. That's really great. Thanks for sharing that with us. Thank you for listening. We'll be doing this all again tomorrow when we'll be reviewing our first day quarterfinals, Krejcikova Keys, followed by Shapovalov Nadal, then night session, Barty Pegula, and then Monfils Berrettini. It's going to be good, folks. We'll be talking about it all on tomorrow's Day 9 Tennis Podcast. Subscribe to the newsletter if you haven't already. You can still become a friend of the pod. Get yourself an intro, get yourself a shout out, and we'll speak to you tomorrow.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.